Got it.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Unity Center of Light. Today is Sunday, April the 24th, and it's a bright and beautiful day. I'm glad to be here with all of you. Unity Center of Light is a spiritual community that nurtures the growth of those who wish to develop the potential of their spirit, mind, and body. Today is an even more special day than regular day because we have lots of guests with us today. Our guest speaker, Lily Sandberg, our guest musicians, Nina Gibson and Leanne Gioli, and then all of us, we all get to be brand new today, that only today can do. So I'm going to ask you to share with me our mission and our vision statement. Can you guys see that? Give me a thumbs up. Okay. So join me in the mission of Unity Center of Light is to empower individuals to express their indwelling divine potential. We teach there is a power within each of us far greater than anything that exists outside of us. And our foundation statement, there is only one power and one presence active in my life and affairs, God the good, omnipotent. And now I'd like to invite Christine Harper, our California contingent, to read the daily word for us today.
Good morning, Unity Center of Light. Today's daily word is gather. We gather and magnify the presence of God. As I gather with others in the spirit of love and peace, my awareness of God's presence becomes more powerful, even palpable. Together, we create an energy, a vibration greater than any of us has alone. I am comfortable and at ease when I notice our differing appearances, preferences, backgrounds, and opinions, because I am reminded of the limitless diversity of divine expression and my place in it. When I join in fellowship with my family, friends, and all others who are dear to me, each of us becomes a mirror for the others. We see in one another the divine presence that lives in and expresses as every person. The unifying energy of divine love unites and binds us together. In this love, we are one. And from Psalm 133:1, how very good and pleasant it is when kindred live together in unity.
Thank you, Christine. Perfect daily word for today, right? Okay, so it's my great good pleasure this morning to introduce to you guys again. Many of you are familiar with Lily from her previous visits to us, but I've had the divine pleasure of working with her through the Unity Eastern Region as the communication specialist. Lily grew up in Unity, was both a participant and a supporter of Youth of Unity activities, and still is, I'm sure. Actually, she supported the leadership event in February that we had in the Eastern region. So there's probably lots more I could tell you about her, but it would all be redundant because it all just means she's wonderful and we're grateful for her. And we're excited to see what she has to share with us today. So Lily, are you ready to roll?
Absolutely.
All right, go for it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, April. I always love being here. And here, meaning that we get to gather together, just like the daily word said with Christine, how beautiful it is to be able to bring my mom to church on the East Coast when I'm in Kansas City and she's in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I love that we get to do this, and I love being able to be a part of this and be with you this morning. So I am Lily Sandberg. My pronouns are she, her, and I am finishing up my ministerial school process, which is very exciting. 51 days until graduation, not like I'm counting, but it is one of the gifts of being in this process in Unity right now, being in this education system, being able to say, where is the world right now and how does Unity fit with it? And that's one of the things that is part of my mission, is making this relevant, because I think there is a lot of lip service done to make us feel better. And lip service is great because it makes us feel better. But if all we are doing is putting a Band-Aid over the reality of our world and not working in the reality of our world with our spiritual tools, I feel like we are doing a disservice. And so that's kind of what brought me to this topic today, that being able to talk about the four F's of surviving the world: fight, flight, freeze, and faith. And this is one of those pieces that I'm really excited about, being able to bring in my background and my love of psychology and mental health in with the spiritual tools. One of the greatest gifts I was given was not only being able to be brought up in Unity, but being raised by a pack of social workers, is what I call them. That my mom is a social worker. Many of the important adults that were important in my life growing up and still now have taught me that there are pieces of who we are that will always be there. And there are pieces of the world that have been made that benefit some more than others. And as part of our spiritual practice, we have to learn how to acknowledge and how to learn how to change what we can change within this world. And so that's what we're diving into today, is how can we bring in the spiritual component into our very real human instinct? So just by a show of hands, how many are familiar with the term fight or flight? Okay, so this isn't a new term, wonderful. Fight or flight was created in 1951. That's when the term was coined. It's also called an acute stress response. And so this was created by a psychologist, Walter Kanin, who said that fight or flight is the embedded, ingrained part of our survival instincts that has been there since our ancient ancestors, so that they could choose what to do when they were dealing with a dangerous environment or scenario. So fight or flight has been here since the dawn of time, since the beginning of our evolution, that fight or flight has been here to say, there is a danger to me. What will I do in this moment? And I say this like it's a question, like we have any choice in the matter, when the reality is, this is ingrained and automatic. That part of our lineage in connection with our ancient ancestors is this fight or flight response. Because it is part of our survival, that we wouldn't be here today without this piece of our deep humanity. That even Jesus, even the people who persecuted Jesus, had a fight or flight response. That all of the ancestors before us have been working within us. And I think there is a beauty in that connection, knowing that each human has this innate response. But just as we all have it, our understanding of it has developed. And so what has happened is we have brought in the idea of freezing, that fight, flight, or freeze, that we are being able to ask the question, what is the best thing for me to do in this scenario? Or what am I used to doing in a scenario like this? That to fight means to show up with aggression. That might mean physical aggression. That might mean raising a voice. That might mean engaging in conflict. Flight, pretty self-explanatory. You are getting out of that situation as fast as you can, either physically running or doing whatever you can to remove yourself. And to freeze, it literally means to be, you are unable to move or act against the response. And so when we break down fight, flight, or freeze, the goal is all the same. It's just the execution that is different. And it's utilizing one of these to be able to use in the moment. But always the goal is not to continue to use it beyond that moment. That if we put ourselves in the shoes of the Neanderthal, they don't wear shoes, but the image is still the same. If you had a saber-toothed tiger coming at you, freeze was not an option. You would get eaten. That being able to say fight or flight when you had a saber-toothed tiger, those were your only options. But as we have developed, we are not fighting saber-toothed tigers. but we might be wrung out by our boss in front of our coworkers. That is a different kind of saber-toothed tiger, in which freeze might be the exact response that comes to you. And so as we have developed in this world, our innate coping necessities for survival have changed, because survival means something different. That survival is not just the bodily ability to continue living. Survival means, am I safe? Am I okay? Psychologically, physically, mentally, and spiritually. And so as we have evolved, we can also ask the question, how have I evolved with this? That many of us, all of us, I would venture to say, have one of these that is stronger for us. We are either a fighter, we are a flighter, or we are a freezer. And that is not something we probably got the choice in. This was one of those pieces that was given to us in our creation as part of our evolution in this now moment. That what is the most natural response for us? What has worked in the past? What did we see modeled for us in our homes by our parents and guardians? This has probably informed us, and you might know right now. You're saying, Lily, I'm a fighter. I'm the one, if they come at me, I'm coming at them. You may say, absolutely, I am conflict avoidant. I am hightailing out of there as fast as I can. Or you might know for yourself that everything in your mind goes blank when conflict comes at you. It is a piece of our self-awareness to know which one of these do we naturally fall into, because we have the capability to use all of them. This is for our survival. But there is one that we go to. So take a moment. Maybe you know it already, but if you don't, I invite you to just ask the question, fight, flight, or freeze, where do I go first? And there is no wrong answer here. This is a piece of you that is made for your survival. Fight, flight, or freeze, where do I go first? For me, it's fight. That in my household, for me to get heard, that means I got loud. That means I was screaming, I was slamming doors, because my need to feel heard only came from getting big and fighting back. Was that the best situation? No. Did that stress my parents out a fair amount? I'm sure it did. But that's what showed up for me. But that is very different from my sister, who's 3 years younger than me, also grew up in unity, also had the same amazing set of parents, who is a fleer and a freezer. And so what we had learned very early on is we respond very differently. Because guess what? Every person we love, every person we don't love, and we just come into contact with, they also have a fight, flight, or freeze response that is natural to them where they go. And guess what? Unless you're a hermit in the mountains, life is happening together in relationship. That there are people we will see and interact with on a daily basis, whether we like it or not. And that's one of the pieces for us to realize in this conversation about not only what is my response, but what are the responses of the people I love, the people I care about. Because I can venture to guess that you might know, for the person you love most, the person you talk with the most, are they a fighter? Are they a fleer? Are they a freezer? If there is a person that you are thinking of right now and you know that, you might be chuckling to yourself. Because in arguments, it always ends up like this, that it never works out, regardless of if you are a fighter. If you love someone who is also a fighter, that just gets loud and no one gets heard. For me, I am a fighter, and my boyfriend, who I love dearly, is a fleer. So I want to yell. I want to feel heard. I want to get this out. And he wants to hightail out of here and not deal with any of it. And what this means for our relationship is we have to, one, acknowledge that we are different. We are different evolutionarily, and we were raised differently. And two, we have to learn how to say, this is where I start in my fight. This is where you start in your flight. How do we come together and make this work? And so part of that, probably the most annoying part of that, you can't change it for them. That keeping your eye on your own bobber is saying, this is all I know, which is how I show up. And that is the only thing I can change. It's probably the most annoying spiritual truth that I know, is that I cannot change other people in how they show up in this world. I can only control how I show up in this world. And so you're probably saying, okay, Lily, we've talked about this. How does this work? How does faith come in? Well, let me tell you. One of the coolest things is that in our brain, where fight, flight, or freeze is happening, is a place called the amygdala. And the amygdala is the emotion center that sees and hears everything that occurs to us instantaneously and is the trigger point for that fight, flight, or freeze response. Right next door in your brain to the amygdala, where your fight, flight, or freeze response kicks in, is your pineal gland. And your pineal gland is the place in your body where faith is originated. That when we talk about the 12 powers of unity that was created by our co-founder, Charles Fillmore, there is a place in our body for each of our 12 powers that we can identify where they are found. And for our 12 power of faith, it is in our pineal gland. The amygdala and the pineal gland, like by requirement, work together. Because if the amygdala is turned on, the pineal gland is turned off. Because when we are in fight, flight, or freeze, that we are just surviving. What the pineal gland and faith tells us is we have to take care of that survival first, and then everything else can come on board. Because I'm not here to say we're going to get rid of this evolutionarily for thousands of years ingrained piece of our humanity and just be able to be in faith at all moments. I'm not saying that. For me, that's a piece of spiritual bypassing. That we need to acknowledge and say, so fight, flight, or freeze will continue. What is our next step, and how can that next step be faith? And what is so fascinating is in our biology, these two things, faith from our pineal gland and fight, flight, or freeze in our amygdala, because they are so close, they can work together if we do the work to have them work together. That we are not naturally hardwired to go to faith as that next step. And so that is the work that we get to do. From Paul Hasselbeck's book, Power Up, he says, faith is found in the pineal gland near the center of the brain. The pineal gland is sometimes called the master gland. Faith is located here because faith is our ability to believe, and it is our beliefs that determine how we think, feel, and act. So after we are done surviving, after we got through whatever was that trigger for fight, flight, or freeze to come on board, that is when we can turn on faith. That is when we can activate the power to have the ability to believe, to determine how we think, feel, and act. Because that is what we can control. Fight, flight, or freeze is here for our survival. Faith can be here for our thriving after we survive. Because if we say, well, I'm just going to turn off fight, flight, or freeze, what that would look like is you will never interact with another person ever again, that you will never interact with your environment ever again. And that sounds exceptionally dull and frankly impossible. One of the pieces that I think is one of the most underrated pieces that we can control in this world is our breath. For me, I have thought for a long time, if I controlled the world, what would look different? That I like to have that piece of control. And the more I have learned, the less I've learned I can control. But at all moments, I can tap in to that source of breath. Because what happens biologically when we take a deep breath is we are relaxing our parasympathetic nervous system, saying, I am not in direct fear for my life. I am not in survival right now. Nothing will kill me. It may be stressful, it may be hurtful, but nothing will kill me. That taking that deep breath tells your body, I am safe. We are going to be okay. And what happens spiritually is our breath connects us with that inner source of truth. That as we breathe in, we tap into that now moment, that place of God, that knowingness, that I am safe. I will be okay. And in that, we can make that next step be faith. We can take ourselves out of the aftershock of fight, flight, or freeze. And I think we forget to breathe when we're in that stress, when we have that moment where our fight, flight, or freeze has been activated. Many times our chest gets tight. If we are breathing, they are shallow. Our eyes are dilated. These are all our physiological responses that are good and protective, but not always needed for that next moment. And what the breath does, what the gift that the breath is saying, we're okay. We're okay. We're okay. And one of the practices that I invite you to bring in is when you are taking that deep breath in, I am good. God's got this. I am good. God's got this. And as you are ready to shift that, I am good. I have this. I am good. I have this. Because we know in unity that we are made in the image and likeness of God with the ability to tap into our godness through our breath. And that sets us up to know what is next. And oftentimes we do not know what is next. And that is where faith comes in. Viktor Frankl said, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. In that space is our breath. That space is created by our breath. That space is sustained by our breath. That our breath is our catalyst for that choice, for growth, for freedom. It begins with a breath. It begins with faith. It begins in that knowing that we are fully human and fully divine, with our full responses of fight, flight, or freeze, and our response into faith after that breath. Because faith is not easy. If faith was easy, this would not even be a talk for today. I would have no material to pull on from one of these 12 powers if it was easy. Because faith is not our automatic response. What is our automatic response? All those lies that we have told ourselves for years. All of our embedded theology. When that space is made, if we are not careful, junk comes in and fills that space. Doubt, fear, lies, all of the pieces of who we are not can fill that space if we are not careful, if we are not conscious. That if the space is made by the breath, but we are not willing to say, and I don't know what comes next, but I know that it will be good because it will be God, we are shortchanging ourselves. That is faith. That is being able to say, okay, I took that breath. I made that space. I have no freaking idea what is coming next or what is mine to do. Faith is that thing that we do not have to know. We do not have to control. We do not have to fall back into the trap of our embedded theology that no longer serves us when we can say, I don't know, but I have faith. Whatever is coming next is made for my good from my goodness, because that is God. There is a quote from Divine Audacity, Linda Martella Whitsett's book, that I want to read to you. It's on her chapter of faith. This is all about the 12 powers too. She says, no one has more need for faith than when experiencing distressing human conditions like illness, loneliness, poverty, or conflict. When racked by pain from an injury, for example, it is challenging to perceive the absolute wholeness of life. However, relying upon the principle of life is precisely the key to relief and healing. Perceiving the animating principle of work in every cell of the body, becoming aware of a limitless source of energy within and around us, and seeing that a temporary condition cannot diminish our wholeness of being, generative and restorative in our nature. Adhering to these principles anchors us to a faith that perceives what cannot be sensed only by human faculties. As Winifred Wilkins Hausman tells us, faith is that quality in us which enables us to look past appearances of lack, limitation, or difficulty, to take hold of the divine idea and believe in it, even though we do not see any evidence of it except in our own mind. Through faith, we know with an inner knowing that truth is not yet expressed to made manifest in the world, but it is coming. That faith sometimes makes you look delusional. That when you have such a big faith in whatever is coming next will be so good and so full of God, people are going to say, okay, did you take your meds this morning? Because it's true that we are called into a big faith. Because faith like a mustard seed, that story in scripture that tells us if our faith is a mustard seed, what will it become? If we allow it, if we fertilize it, if we continue doing this hard and important work, our faith will grow. Because that is our work. Our work is to be able to harness who we are and what is our human nature, which is to survive, which is why fight, flight, or freeze is so important to acknowledge in us. We are not getting rid of that. We are partnered within that knowing to say, this is our work. I will not change that, but I will be more conscious to it. I will be more aware of it. I will grow in my understanding of how I respond. And I will choose, I will make choices. I will cultivate the knowing that faith can be my next step, and I will take it. Because that is the work that we are here to do, and it is not easy. But good and important work is what we are called to do. In many ways, I think it is our responsibility. As folks that are spiritual, which I think many of us are, it is our responsibility to acknowledge these pieces of our humanity, to do the work of, is my fight, flight, or freeze really serving me? When does it come online for me? When can I be more aware of it? When can I apologize after I respond terribly? And knowing all of those human pieces are here for our good, and just knowing them deeper, and then taking that breath and taking that next step into faith. That is how I think we can not only survive in this world, but go beyond surviving, because at some point, survival is not going to cut it for us. As spiritual people, I think we continue to say, what is next? And faith is saying, I don't need to know right now, because it is coming, and it will be good because it is of God. Thank you.
And so, Lily, you're going to take us on into our meditation?
I am. So wherever you are, I invite you to just get comfortable, whatever that looks like for you and your body right now. If you are called to close your outer eyes, feel free to do so. If you want to lower your gaze, if it serves you best to turn off your camera, you have the freedom to do that. Whatever experience taps you into this now moment and into your breath. That breath becoming natural, the inflow and the outflow of life. And as we begin to find that rhythm of our breath, we become deeper connected into this moment. And we take a moment to scan our body. If there is any place of pain or tension, we just surround it with love. If there is anything in your mind or on your heart that is not allowing you to be fully present in this moment, just acknowledge it. Surround it in love. And in this moment, I invite us to tap in to that part of our brain where our fight, flight, or freeze lives. And I invite us to thank it. Thank it for doing the work of keeping us alive. Thank it for doing the work of connecting us with our ancestors and for those who have come before us. We take a moment to thank it for making it a piece of who we are, a piece of our humanness. And we shift over just a little bit to that pineal gland, that source of faith. And we thank it. We thank it for being available at all moments. We thank it for being that spot of faith that can see potential well beyond what our eyes can. And we tap into that place of faith with a willingness to become more comfortable with it, more willing to use it, more aware of it. And so we zoom out to our entire brain, that mind source of intellect, and we thank it for all the thoughts that come, for all the memories that are housed, for all the pieces of who we are that live in that mind. We say thank you. And if there is a sense that you need to apologize to your mind, I invite you to do so. Because sometimes we are not kind to our mind or in our mind about who we are. So as there is immense gratitude for all that it does, we can also say, I am sorry. And as we shift down from our mind, we tap into our heart. That source of connection, that place of life, that place of love. And we thank it, that physical heart, for keeping us alive, for doing the work of our survival, but also that heart space that is our connection, that houses those pieces of us that make us who we are because we love and we care so deeply. And so we take a moment to say thank you. And if there is a need to forgive your heart or to say I'm sorry to your heart, I invite you to do so. Our heart has wisdom well beyond what our mind can process. And sometimes we do not listen. And for that, I am sorry. And my heart, for being too big, too caring, too loving, I say I'm sorry because I know that is not true. And in that gratitude and that grace for our mind, for our heart, we take one more zoom out to our physical body, knowing that this body temple is how we experience this world. And we can take a moment to say thank you. Thank you for all that you do to keep me moving, keep me mobile, keep me present, keep me here. And if there is a need to say I'm sorry to your body, I invite you to do so now. Because our body is doing the best it can. And so we take in this last moment a time to connect with our body, with our heart, with our mind, knowing that with the combination of these, this is who we are. And in that truth, in that wisdom, in that knowing, I invite you to take a few deep breaths. And when you are ready, come back to this space and this time gathered with these people.